From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point. The midterm elections are almost upon us, and figures from President Trump to Taylor Swift are urging their fellow citizens to vote. Less than half of eligible voters are expected to turn up at the polls and cast their ballots, yet apathy probably isn't the main problem here. In the past few years, as we'll hear this hour, it's actually becoming harder to vote. Here's the funny thing. The right to vote is fundamental to our democracy, yet it doesn't appear in the U.S. Constitution. It's just not there. It's something citizens obtain through their states. And new state laws often cast as efforts to ensure the integrity of votes are keeping millions from casting votes that count. This hour on Point, voting rights and the challenges to getting out the vote. You can join us on air or online. Do you have to show a photo ID to vote in your state? Are you sure you'll be able to vote when you show up at the polls next month? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now here in studio in New York is Wendy Weiser, director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law. I think I got that right. She founded the program's Voting Rights and Elections Project. Wendy, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me, David.
Also with us here in studio is Dale Ho. He's director of the ACLU's Voting Rights Project. He has active cases all over the country defending the Voting Rights Act, challenging the cutbacks to early voting, and challenging voter ID laws. Dale, great to have you with us as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
So both of you are people who are researchers and advocates, but you guys are fairly authoritative on what's happening. I want to just tick off a couple of recent actions. It's just examples of some of the things happening around the country. This year, the legislature in New Hampshire passed a bill that deters student voting with special residency requirements. Citizens in North Dakota can no longer use a P.O. box to register to vote, which turns out to be a problem for many Native Americans because the Postal Service will not deliver mail to their communities as they lack a conventional mailing address. And in the state of Indiana, 500,000 voters were not notified before being purged from voting rolls, and that's just in the last 2 years since 2016. Wendy Weiser, what's going on?
Well, we are actually several years in to a multi-year push in many states to restrict access to voting. And we normally think of voting as something that has been advancing forward. We've been increasing access to the franchise since our founding. But really, in the last decade, 24 states have put in place new laws that make it harder for eligible citizens
almost
to
half.
Vote. Almost half the states. And this includes things like the three examples you gave. The most common are very strict voter ID requirements, but there are cutbacks to voter registration access, cutbacks to early voting, cutbacks to polling sites, and a whole host of other innovative ways and hurdles to the ballot box.
What reasons are given for purging people, Wendy Weiser, from the rolls? If people are being taken out, what's the justification?
Well, actually, purging, when done well and properly and responsibly, is actually something that we want our election officials to do. People move, people die. We want our voter rolls to be kept up to date. But what we've been seeing are large-scale, aggressive purges that don't put in place protections to make sure that eligible citizens aren't being removed. And we actually have laws that are supposed to protect against that, and some of them are being just blown through. And we've had a couple of really aggressive purges this year that have come to light that have caught up tens of thousands of eligible voters. Some of them are being sued on. But overall, in the last decade, there's been a real dramatic increase in our purge rates. We went from purging roughly 6% of voters between the presidential elections of 2004 and 2008 to purging almost more than 7%. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but it's more than 4 million voters more being purged across the country. And it's not happening evenly. In places that had a history of discrimination and used to be covered under the Federal Voting Rights Act, we've seen even more aggressive purge rates. In places like Georgia, more than 10%, almost 11% of voters were actually purged from 2016 until now. So there's some real discrepancies across the country.
And briefly, when you talk about history and discrimination, I just want to make sure we're not glossing over here. You're talking about racial discrimination and our racial past in this country.
That's right. So we're really seeing a heightened purge rate in states that used to have ongoing problems with race discrimination in voting. And every time we look into these purges, they are disproportionately sweeping up voters of color. And even the most recent revelations in Georgia, mm-hmm. where 53,000 registrations are being held because of they're failing to meet this no-match policy the state has put in place, which we can talk about later. More than 70% of those registrations are from African-American and other minority voters. So these are not evenly distributed across the country and across populations.
And I want to talk a little bit more about Georgia as this hour unfolds. Dale Ho, I do want to take a look for a moment at Kris Kobach, who's the Republican nominee. He's running for governor in Kansas, and the election's coming up in a couple weeks. He has a dual role. He's also the Secretary of State for the state of Kansas, and he's a really strong proponent on the state level and on the national field of voter ID laws. He says his razor-thin margin in his primary race in August really makes the case for the law.
When the margin is 300, that's enough to steal an election. And so this election makes the case for photo ID. It makes the case for proof of citizenship.
Dale Ho of the ACLU, what's wrong with wanting to make sure that voters are legally entitled to vote?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with making sure that voters are legally entitled to vote. We absolutely should be doing that. The question is, how do we do it? In 49 states and the District of Columbia, the way that we make sure that people are United States citizens when they register to vote is we ask them to swear an oath under penalty of perjury, for which they can be prosecuted, that they are in fact United States citizens. And that's effective. What Secretary Kobach has done is something quite different. He asks people to show a document like a birth certificate or a passport when you register to vote. And the effect of that law has been to stop one out of seven voter registration applications in the state of Kansas, over 30,000 people over a three-year period from registering to vote, with absolutely no evidence that that's necessary to prevent a problem of non-citizens registering to vote in the state of Kansas.
Well, just to be clear, I mean, you say there's no evidence that there's a overall problem, but is, you know, a reasonable listener might hear that and say, well, maybe there are 30,000 people who just don't have the evidence to show they deserve to be able to vote.
Well, the state of Kansas never took that position in our litigation over this. With the state of Kansas.
So I want to be clear, you guys were the guys fighting on the other side of the law.
Oh, yeah. We sued to stop this law, and we got a court order earlier this year that put the law off, that took the law off the books. Here's what we know from this law. We know that people who can't afford their birth certificates, for example, weren't able to register to vote. We know that people who moved around more frequently, for example, college students were disproportionately affected by this law. Over 40% of the people whose registrations were blocked under this law were under the age of 30. And we even know that some people who showed their birth certificates to the state of Kansas still ended up getting disenfranchised because the state didn't make a record of that fact. Several of our clients actually showed their birth certificates at the time that they registered to vote.
So they met even that demand.
They met that demand. They appeared at the polls in the 2014 midterm and were told, too bad, so sad, we don't have any record of you having shown your birth certificate. You can't vote. So the law was really not the most well-implemented law, if I can say that. And when we asked the state, what's your evidence that you have non-citizens registered to vote? They came up with a total of 38 cases over a 20-year period, fewer than two non-citizens registering to vote per year. About 10 of them had ever cast ballots. And the evidence indicated that most of these people became registered through a mistake, either by themselves or by state official.
And we'll be hearing just in a few minutes this hour from a Republican Secretary of State who has put in place, who has expanded the rules, but also put in place some more restrictive ID requirements for voters as well. I want to turn to the phones now. You guys are calling with your experiences. We have a caller from Nashville, Tennessee. Larry, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, in Tennessee, we've had the a little bit of the Taylor Swift phenomenon. We had the her announcement of encouraging folks to register and endorsing Phil Bredesen and Jim Cooper, and so there was a big uptick. And there was mm-hmm. some pretty good activity in registration prior to that. And what's happened is that apparently, particularly in Memphis and Nashville, maybe in some of the other areas, they're having trouble, which is somewhat understandable, getting all those folks processed in time for either the November 6th election, but certainly having a problem getting them processed for early vote.
And Larry, let me just ask you quickly, Larry, are you yourself involved in these efforts, or are you just seeing it happen around you?
I have some friends who are working, who are in aware of and involved in the efforts to register and involved in the efforts to try to help encourage the election commissions to get on it and get these folks registered so they don't have to cast provisional ballots.
And thank you so much for your call, and thank you for that insight. Wendy Weiser, quickly, you know, people often talk about midterm apathy. How big an element is apathy in the voter participation percentages we see in these midterm elections, typically in the, call it, low 40s?
Well, we do have abysmally low participation rates, not only in midterms. I mean, even our presidential elections, we barely scratch 60%, and at local elections, it's sometimes in the single digits. Part of the problem is voters aren't motivated to participate in a particular election, and part of the problem is the cost of voting, the inconvenience is too much for them. And the caller pointed out the voter registration system and some of the problems in processing it. And I think that's sort of one of the critical problems with our system nationwide. We still rely in much of the country on people filing pen and paper and sending it in the mail and then having election officials type this into the voter registration rolls.
So state of the art 1963, basically.
Yeah, we have seen a lot of progress, though, and that's sort of one of the things that I think we should be moving towards that could solve some of the problems that your caller referenced.
So as you can hear, we're discussing voter rights with experts, with you. Who gets to vote and who doesn't? You can join the conversation. Has it been hard to register in your state? What has it taken? Or has it gotten easier? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're talking about voter rights and the challenges to voting in these United States. You can join the conversation. Have you ever been knocked off the rolls? How come? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest this hour, Wendy Weiser of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU and Dale Ho of the ACLU. You know, the Democratic nominee for governor in Georgia, Stacey Abrams, has spent her years of late as an activist registering residents to vote. Her opponent, Brian Kemp, is Georgia's Secretary of State. And I think this is a really unusual confluence of careers focused on the issue of voting right at the ballot box, right? Stacey Abrams appeared on MSNBC yesterday to discuss the tens of thousands of voter registration applications currently on hold in the state of Georgia. She has accused her opponent, Brian Kemp, of repressing citizens' right to vote.
The challenge is this process called exact match, and we've been fighting him on this since 2014. What happens is if you have a hyphen in your last name, if you have a difficult spelling, if anyone misspells or leaves out anything, they can use that as a reason to not process your registration. And that means that about 53,000 Georgians currently have their registrations in pending status. Technically, they can cast provisional ballots, but provisional ballots are often not processed. And so we're deeply worried that 53,000 people, 70% of whom are African American, will be disenfranchised in this election.
Dale Ho, tell me, what would Brian Kemp say if he were here? And how do you assess that argument?
It's pretty difficult for me to challenge.
No, I'd like to hear it, though.
To channel someone like Brian Kemp. But I guess what he would say is we need to make sure that the people who are registering are actually the people who they claim to be, and therefore we need to impose strict standards on whether or not we process an application. But I think what's really critical here is that a minor typo, like a missing hyphen or the transposition of two letters when someone's entering a voter registration form into a database. That shouldn't be a basis for disenfranchising people. And one thing to underscore, I think, is the fact that people who are on this list, I don't want there to be any confusion. All of those people can still vote in November. They might not show up on regular voter registration rolls, but they all still have the right to show up at the polls and cast a provisional ballot. That's not a perfect solution because provisional ballots are counted under different rules than regular ballots, but no one should be deterred from voting because they're scared that they might have been purged.
I'd like to take a call now from Waycross, Georgia. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I was calling about the ID. Now, when you file your tax returns in most states, you have to put in your driver's license information in to get your tax return processed, including earned income credit and other credits that the people that you are saying are being disenfranchised have that because they want to get those refunds. So I don't see how people are being disenfranchised by using an ID when you vote.
Thank you so much, John. We'd also like to take a call from Appleton, Wisconsin. I believe it's Mark. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
What bothers me is, and it's rarely discussed, is the fact that every one of these voter ID laws is always tied to serious restrictions to access to the polls, either reducing the polling places, polling time, when the clerk's offices are open to file absentee ballots, which was the case here in Wisconsin. So it's not just about, well, it seems to me that undermines this argument. It's about voter fraud. It's about reducing people's rights to vote.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that, Mark. Joining me now from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, is someone who may help address some of these questions from a different perspective. John Merrill is the Secretary of State for the state of Alabama. Since taking office in 2015, more than 1 million new voters have been registered in that state. The Alabama process requires voters, as I understand it, to show a photo ID when voting. John Merrill, welcome to On Point.
David, great to be with you. Thanks for having me as your guest.
Yes, sir. Tell me just from the outset, what's your approach to having voters on the rolls?
Well, David, we want each and every eligible U.S. citizen that's a resident of Alabama to be registered to vote and have a photo ID. And we have gone to extra lengths to make sure that people are accommodated whenever that occurs. And we visited all 67 counties at least one time every year with our mobile units, as well as having our Board of Registrar's office open each and every day that the courthouse is open in all 67 counties. And we visit festivals, events, and activities in our counties throughout the state at different times to make sure that we're giving people ample opportunity to register and to obtain IDs if they don't have one. Now, I will also tell you that in the rare instances where people say, hey, I can't get to the Board of Registrar's office because of my work schedule, or I can't get to one of the mobile unit locations because it's not convenient, or I don't go to the events or festivals. In those rare occasions where that has happened, David, we've gone to people's homes, and we have given them photo IDs in their homes. And we are very excited about what we've achieved during the last 3 years, 9 months, and 23 days that I've had the privilege to be Alabama Secretary of State. We've registered 1,095,861 new voters, and we now have 3,434,863 registered voters in Alabama. Those numbers are unprecedented and unparalleled in the history of the state.
What's the need for the voter ID?
Well, the reason that I voted for it, David, was because I want to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. If you need an ID when you open a bank account, if you need an ID when you go to the movie, if you need an ID when you buy a six-pack of beer, or if you buy a pack of cigarettes, then you ought to be able to present an ID when you exercise the most precious right that we have, and that's to participate in our Democratic Republic as a voter.
I want to take a briefly, John Merrill, I want to take a call from a nearby state, from Louisiana, New Orleans. I have Sharon on the line. Sharon, share your thoughts on this.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
In Louisiana, you've had to show an ID with your voter registration for all the years we've been here, which is over 20. However, the ID now has changed. You have to have a real ID to vote. And the real ID requires you to show a birth certificate, a Social Security card, and proof of residence, two documents. But they don't tell you you need that. Mm-hmm. You don't find out about the Real ID until you go and get your driver's license renewed. So if you're not in the schedule to get your driver's license renewed before the next time you vote, then you won't realize you need a Real ID, and you won't be able to vote. So I think
Sharon,
the next election...
Sharon, thank you so much for that. I appreciate that. John Merrill, you're Secretary of State in Alabama. I realize some of the specifics and intricacies may be a little different than Louisiana. Nonetheless,
David, and it's important to remember that they vary from state to state. I mean, we have 10 different elements that can be achieved to use when you go to vote, including your driver's license or a non-driver ID or the free Alabama voter ID that we give, any other valid state-issued ID, a federal ID, a student ID, a passport, a military ID, a tribal ID. We just want to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat, period. That's it. And we've broken every record in the history of the state for voter registration and voter participation in our elections. And we're doubly excited about that because not a single time has anyone been denied access to the polls because they didn't have the proper credentials when they went to vote. Not one time.
Let me ask you one question that some of the folks who analyze what efforts in your state and other states, particularly in the South, but not only in the South, have said. They say two things, one of which they say that some of these rules, even if framed very neutrally, disproportionately affect voters of color, citizens of color. How do you respond to that, to those repercussions or those critiques?
David, they're entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts.
Uh-huh.
So what are the facts? I've just shared them with you about voter registration and photo ID delivery. I've shared them with you about voter participation, where we had 1.2 million Alabamians go to the polls in 2016 in our primaries, 2.1 million Alabamians go to the polls in our general election in 2016.
And are you finding those levels, sir, to be sort of proportionally equal among, particularly in your state, you know, white, black, and Latino voters?
Absolutely.
In terms of the effect on them?
Look, 93% of all eligible Alabamians are registered to vote right now, doing mm-hmm. what we're doing. 93%. We only have 4.8 million people in our state. 1.1 million of those people are between the ages of 0 and 18 years. And then I told you how many that we've got registered statewide, which is 3,434,863. You also need to know that we were sued by the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. And one of the things that they charged in the lawsuit was that they had identified 188,000 Alabamians that couldn't get IDs. Well, I told Sherrilyn Ifill that she was being disingenuous with the people of Alabama and the people across the nation in sharing that.
And Ms. Ifill, of course, the head of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
Yes, sir. And she can't identify 8,000, eight or one person in our state that wants an ID that can't get one. Because if they do identify one, I will dispatch people from our elections division to go to those individuals' homes to make sure that they get IDs. We've done that on numerous occasions. We'll continue to do that. That's
right.
That federal lawsuit was summarily dismissed with prejudice by the federal judge when it came to him in a 62-page opinion that said if every state in the union was doing what Alabama's doing, every state in the union could have voter ID without equivocation.
Dale, I want to bring in Dale Ho of the ACLU here. Dale, what do you make of what you've heard? How does that comport with what you understand?
Well, I want to pick up on a comment that one of the callers made a moment ago, that the devil is really in the details when it comes to these identification requirements. And as Secretary Merrill said, they vary dramatically from state to state. And if you look at the kinds of ID that states will accept, the laws stop looking like legitimate fraud prevention techniques and more like efforts to try to curate the electorate. Let me give you some examples of what I mean by that. In Texas, you can vote with a driver's license, with a concealed weapons permit, but you can't vote with a University of Texas government-issued student ID card. In North Carolina, you could vote with passport, military ID, but you couldn't vote with a municipal government employee ID card, with a University of North Carolina government-issued student ID card, with a public assistance ID card. In Wisconsin, where we sued, you could vote with a military ID card, but you couldn't vote with a veteran's health benefits ID card until 3 or 4 years after our litigation commenced. So these laws seem almost surgically designed to try to slice out certain parts of the electorate. And that is what a court held with respect to the North Carolina law, that it was intended to surgically target African-American voters. That's what a court held with respect to the Texas voter ID law in an opinion from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit by Judge Katarina Haynes, a George W. Bush appointee, found that that law was disproportionately affecting black and Hispanic voters. So I take Secretary Merrill's point that these laws vary dramatically from state to state, but courts in multiple states have found that a number of them are racially discriminatory.
I'd like to take a couple of quick calls. We have a call from Dover, Delaware. John, weigh in here.
I'd like to comment real quickly on what the gentleman was just explaining about the identifications. You see, what he had said is you cannot vote with a valid college identification card or a municipality's identification card. The reason being is because you can still obtain a college identification card and a municipality's identification card, even if you're not a citizen of the country. And that's the reason being why they want legitimate identifications. Mm-hmm. It seems to me almost like the Democratic Party wants illegal immigrants to vote. Like, it needs illegal immigrants to vote because true Americans won't stand for any of their ideals.
All right, John, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. John Merrill, Secretary of State of Alabama, weigh in here.
Well, now, David, I'm very appreciative of you having those last two, not the caller that just called, but the two previous experts that just chimed in, because they proved my point. What I indicated to you that the federal judge had said in his opinion was that if every state in the union was doing what Alabama's doing, every state in the union could have voter ID laws without equivocation, because all the examples that have been given by the last two experts are included in our list. And we do allow each one of those things to be used as identification. That's one of the reasons why our law has been so successful, and that's the reason why we were successful in opposing the challenge that was issued by the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. And we're very, very excited about that.
John, in the state of Alabama, there is a law now that allows former felons, once they've served their time and paid their price to society, to rejoin the ranks of people with voting rights. However, it's my understanding that—
David, I think it's important for you to note that our office is the one that initiated that legislation.
My understanding is that your office hasn't spent money to sort of amplify that fact and to inform people who have served time of that in sort of a public way. Is that true?
Don't let me lose you, okay? I've already told you twice. I'll tell you again.
Yes, sir. Our goal
is one thing, to ensure that each and every eligible U.S. citizen that's a resident of Alabama is registered to vote and has a photo ID. Now, when I tell you that, that means we go to all 67 counties. We visit with civic groups. We visit with support groups that would be supportive of individuals like your talking about. We visit with church groups. We visit with any kind of organization that would like us to make presentations on what has occurred.
Now, but let me just to be clear, sir, are you spending money, like, very quickly, yes, no, because I want to get Wendy in here before a break. Have you spent money just to sort of publicize that? Are you doing advertising campaigns? Are you doing billboards?
Money,
are you doing anything like that?
We spend money every year publicizing that we want each and every eligible U.S. citizen that's a resident of Alabama to be registered to vote and have an ID. We do that every year and have been doing it for 4 years, and it had never been done like we're doing it now. Ever.
Terrific. John, let me just pause you there so that Wendy Weiser, just give us some sense from your standpoint in the minute that we have left of, you know, how you'd assess Alabama. Does it stand apart, perhaps, than other states in what it's doing?
Well, I can't assess the efforts to get people IDs, but I can tell you that there's no dispute that if every single American citizen had a state-issued photo ID, that we wouldn't be here arguing about whether or not that can or can't be used for voting. The issue is that across the country, roughly 10% of eligible Americans don't. And if everybody did efforts that got every single citizen photo ID, then the debate would be very different. What we've found in all the states where these laws are being challenged is that the efforts fall dramatically short. Mm-hmm. Courts find hundreds of thousands of voters without IDs, and these efforts tend to only get, you know, dozens or hundreds of people IDs. If we can fix that, we'd be in a very different place.
Well, Wendy Weiser, I want you to stick around. Dale Ho, also John Merrill, if you'd stay with us, I'd appreciate that. We're all discussing the right to vote in America in the year 2018. You can join the conversation. What consequences are you seeing to some of these rules? Are they helping? Are they inhibiting? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're talking about the right to vote and about who actually gets to exercise that right just weeks before the 2018 midterm elections. You can join the conversation. How would you make it easier for people to cast legitimate votes? Can we ensure the integrity of the vote at the same time? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests this hour here in studio are Wendy Weiser of the Brennan Center for Justice NYU, Dale Ho of the ACLU, and from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, we're gratified to have the Secretary of State for the state of Alabama, John Merrill. I want to quickly take a couple of calls with some differing perspectives. We've got a call from Baltimore, Maryland. Ed, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I voted first when I was 18 years old. I'm 60 years old. I've never missed a vote, even when I was out of the country in the military. I was out of town traveling. I think it's a question of taking the extra effort make sure that my right to vote is counted.
Thank you so much for that call, Ed. I can verify that accent is truly from Baltimore. We've also got a call from Alex from Charleston, South Carolina. Go right ahead.
Thanks for having me. I'd like to follow up on the previous caller's comment. My husband is an active duty service member, and I find that it has become very difficult for service members to register, especially last minute. Some of the younger service members are frustrated because they don't have, they no longer have their home state IDs. They've moved to different duty stations and received driver's licenses in other states, and their home states do not accept military IDs when registering. Mm-hmm. Added to that, they need the 30 days to receive a ballot and mail it in. So I think that we are doing a disservice to our service members by not allowing military IDs to be used for voter registrations in all 50 states and for creating such a huge gap in allowing them to send in their forms.
Alex, thank you so much for sharing that perspective. I really appreciate it. One thing you haven't heard us talk a lot about today is voter fraud, in part because there's so little evidence that it really happens. I think that there was one survey done of something like 800 million votes cast over a 14-year period, and there were maybe scores of allegations that seemed credible, maybe 100 or 200. But that concern, while talked about a lot, particularly in the 2016 race by the president and a lot of his supporters, there really isn't a lot of evidence to support that. Nonetheless, as we've all attested, there is a desire to ensure that people legitimately have the right to vote in these things. Wendy Weiser, you actually had some questions for Secretary of State John Merrill. He's Secretary of State of Alabama and has been good enough to join us this hour as well.
So I wanted to build off what the last caller talked about, the difficulty of at least many Americans to register to vote. And the Secretary Merrill was very right to point out that what we need to do is ensure that each and every eligible citizen in the country is registered to vote. I'm glad to hear that he thinks that Alabama has very high voter registration rates, and I know that there have been disputes about those numbers, but we can all agree that it should be a goal to get every eligible voter on the voter rolls. And with that, there's been a real advances across the country in how to do that better, how to sort of modernize the system so it's not just relying on ads and papers and visits to libraries and driver's license offices, but we're seeing in many states states. We're moving towards a more automatic voter registration system. 13 states and D.C. have already adopted that in the last 3 years alone. And there's been really bipartisan support and momentum, and it really works to expand voter registration and to do so in a much more accurate and seamless way. And I wanted to hear a little bit from Secretary Merrill about whether he's interested in taking steps to advance that in the state of Alabama, like in some of his neighboring states like Georgia.
Well, now, Wendy, I think you know without me saying it, but I will say it anyway, that we have led the nation in the last 3 years, 9 months, and 23 days in voter registration per capita. Nobody has done more than we've done. Nobody's done it better than we've done it. We don't just win in football. We win at the polls. I think that's something that everybody needs to know. I also think it's important to know that when it comes to automatic voter registration, which is what you're talking about, there's a different definition for what automatic voter registration means to certain people. Now, one of the questions that I raise whenever somebody introduces that concept to me is that, do you believe that if you have automatic registration in your state, that there should be an opt-out provision? And an opt-out provision would mean that if somebody says, no, I don't want to be registered, then they should be given the opportunity to keep from being registered when they engage in that activity, whether it be getting a new driver's license, getting social services, or whatever it happens to be. Now, if they agree that there should be an opt-out provision, then what I immediately tell them is, that's what we have today. You just have to opt in, which is why we've had 93% of the people in Alabama that are now registered to vote. And I'm very, very excited about that.
Dale Ho.
Sure. I think anyone who's ever been in a system where you have to opt in versus a system where you have to opt out knows that those two kinds of systems are quite different and that they yield very, very different levels of participation. Now, in the abstract, you might think that those things aren't very different, but the empirical data shows otherwise. Most states have some kind of opt-in system through the DMV right now. Other states have an opt-out system. Oregon was the first state to adopt that, and Oregon saw its registration rates skyrocket. So I think I'm glad that the secretary says that he's committed to trying to make sure that every eligible person in Alabama is registered to vote. And the easiest way to do that is to create an opt-out system.
So we're getting callers who are suggesting their own thoughts on this. Let's first go to Abington, Virginia. Perry, what would you suggest to make things a little more rational from your standpoint?
David, thanks for taking my call. Wendy, Dale, Secretary Merrill. Secretary Merrill, to you specifically, what would you think of potentially creating a holiday, whether it be a state holiday or even a proposal perhaps at a national level to have an official day off for voting, and whether or not that would be in conjunction with a Friday and a Saturday to have a weekend day so that potentially more people would have the opportunity to actually vote? I'll take the response off air. Thank you.
Thanks, Barry. Secretary?
Well, Barry, I think it's important to know that it's been my observation and my experience that people vote when it's important to them. And if you say, well, if we had voting on Saturday or if we had voting on a day that was specified as a holiday, that it would potentially increase the turnout. Well, when we've broken every record in the history of the state in the last three major elections that we've had, the empirical data, as Dale said, speaks for itself, which is that people come when they want to vote.
Secretary Merrill, let me just play devil's advocate for a moment. Obviously, there was significant turnout for the
David
special.
Again?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
It's Dave Folkenflik. There's obviously real interest when Roy Moore and Doug Jones were going off in that special Alabama race, right, for the
Absolutely.
Senate. And people really turned out. But what would make you think that people wouldn't have turned out more if they didn't have the day off from work? I mean, there are a lot of folks for whom they have to take public transit.
Because this is what I know. I know that when we had the presidential election, November the 8th, 2016, we had 2.1 million Alabamians go to the polls. 72% of people that were registered voted.
And you sound like a guy. You sound like a guy to me who's very much in quest of 100% participation of people who can do it. Right?
Well, I
like it sounds to me like that's your desire.
That's what I said earlier. We want each and every eligible U.S. citizen that's a resident of Alabama to be registered to vote and to be able to participate and have a voter ID card and to be able to participate at the level they want to participate. But I don't know why some people vote and some people don't. If I knew that, I'd write a book and sell it, and then I wouldn't be Secretary of State anymore. I'd be a multimillionaire.
And but, I promise you that when you write that book, I'll welcome you on Point. We'll have you on in the second hour on Friday, and we'll enjoy yourself very much. I'd like the ACLU's Del Ho to weigh in here.
I just want to take Secretary Merrill's observation about when people want to vote, they vote. And just take that to what it logically implies, right? If we think that the only reason that people don't vote is because they're not interested in voting, then what we're saying is that in the United States, where we have turnout that's not even in the top 30 amongst democracies around the world, that Americans just aren't as interested in politics as, say, people in other countries. I don't believe that that's right. I think Americans really do care about politics, and they really do care about how government affects their lives. And the reason we don't have participation rates as high as some of our sister democracies is one of the reasons anyway, is that our rules are very different. Most other countries, they don't put the burden of registration on the voters themselves. Most other countries have single days on which people vote, and those days are days when you don't have other obligations when it comes to things like work. So if we're really interested in seeing our participation rates on par with other vibrant democracies, we would do more than just say, well, if people cared about it, they'd show up. We would try to see what those other democracies are doing and emulate what works.
I want to take a call now from South Burlington, Vermont. Monica, share us your thoughts on this.
Hi, thank you. Same day registration. In Vermont, we do it, and to me, it seems so fair because if somebody gets to the polls and they're not registered as a result, they can take care of it right there on the spot. They could even go home, get whatever paperwork they'd need to register on the spot, and come back to the polls again. It's a great system in Vermont, and I wish you guys included Jim Kondo, Secretary of State, on your program because he would add a lot. Thanks.
Thanks for the recommendation, Monica. Wendy, how varied are the participation and are the rules from state to state? What's really proving successful?
Well, as the caller pointed out, same-day registration is an innovation that actually has also been expanding across the country and has been proved to drive higher voter turnout measurably by roughly 5 percentage points in many cases. And I'm heartened to hear so many callers looking for ways to expand participation and looking at what are the obstacles and what are the ways we can make it more convenient.
Click through a few that you think would not be partisan issues but would just sort of be embraced by people interested in effective government.
Well, I think we've heard some of them. Automatic voter registration and same-day registration, two of the most impactful reforms there are. Early voting has been an innovation. It was actually first invented by Republicans. It has swept many states across the nation, and when coupled with good voter mobilization efforts, really can dramatically turn up participation, especially when weekends and evenings are included. I want to say that there are hopeful signs where voters can actually play a role in actually trying to improve the voting process in their state. And it's not only asking their secretaries of state or their legislators to do something, but in four states this year, there are actually initiatives on the ballot to implement some of these very reforms that to make the voting process work better in those states. That would be Florida, Maryland, Nevada, Michigan, all have pro voter access initiatives on the ballot where voters can take the matter into their own hands.
John Merrill, do you embrace any of those for Alabama? Even if sound appealing to you?
David, we're doing all we can do to ensure that each and every eligible U.S. citizen that's a resident of Alabama is registered to vote and has a photo ID. Frankly, I don't care about what they're doing in other states or in other countries. I care about Alabama because that's the only one I can control. And I'm very excited about what we've been able to do here, and our citizens are too. And we've been used as a national model. As a matter of fact, I was invited just last week to testify in Washington, D.C. about what we are doing. Now, look, I want to make sure that if new technologies and new innovations are introduced, if they're applicable to our state, we want to introduce them. And that's why we have the ability for our people to register at the driver's license location when they get a new license or when they renew their license. They have social services provided. They can get registered to vote or change your voter registration record at that time. We introduced a mobile app for our phone for people to be able to register on the phone for the first time or to change your voter registration record. They can also do it on the computer. But we want to make sure that we're doing all we can. But when you're breaking every record in the history of the state for registration and participation, there's only two words, roll tide. And when you say that, you've said it all, my friend.
Well, so what? Let's look, if you don't mind, John Merrill, just let's look outside the borders of Alabama. If it's the runaway success story that you describe, I have no reason to doubt it's not. But let's say it is. You know, what do you think about what you see in terms of some of the voter ID rules and some of the inhibition rules that have created friction in the ability of people to register in other states? I know, you know, people in positions like yours talk all the time with colleagues across borders. You know, when you see people putting in more restrictive rules in Kansas, in Wisconsin, North Dakota, what strikes you as the motivation there and the effectiveness in terms of getting people to vote?
Well, look, that would call for speculation or conjecture on my part to try to determine exactly why those people were doing what they were doing. But what we want to do is to be open-minded, to be willing to accept, and to make changes whenever they're necessary in order to advance the opportunity for people to participate at all levels. Yeah, I've gotten some great ideas from Jim Condos, who the caller talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. He's president of the National Association, which I'm a member of. I was with him last week in D.C. He's a good friend of mine. He would tell you that I'm a good friend of his. He's learned some things from me. I've learned things from him. It's important for us to have that type of exchange so we can try to improve the services and the opportunities that we're providing for all of our citizens in each one of the 50 states. But just because something is working in one state doesn't mean it'll work as well in another. And just because someone has a problem with something in one state doesn't mean that it'll go without a problem in that
sure.
next state.
And Secretary Merrill, I do want to provide, we're talking about things that we've learned. I want to provide a little fact check on what we learned today. As a listener has emailed in to contest what one of our earlier callers said about what was required of voters in Louisiana, that is a real ID, a photo ID, it seems to be a requested or strongly encouraged voter ID law that essentially asks voters to provide a driver's license or certain other kinds of specific photo IDs recognized by the state. But there's a softness to that. That is that voters could sign a statement attesting to the fact they're eligible or cast a provisional ballot. So it's not as though they couldn't vote if they were to show up without that particular kind of verification. You've been hearing today from John Merrill. He's the Secretary of State for Alabama. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
Thank you for having me, David.
Dale Ho is director of the ACLU's Voting Rights Project. He's been here with us here in Studio New York. Thank you, Dale.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And Wendy Weiser is director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law. Thank you for your insights today, Wendy.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and follow us on the Twitters and the Facebooks. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hartzinski, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, Tanya Riley, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, and Miriam Wasser, with help from Madeline D'Angelo, Justine Daum, and Lexi Peary. Our executive producer is Karen Shipman. I'm David Folkenflik, and this... the show is On Point. ¶¶